What is up, everybody? This is Jim Mylock, and you're listening to Pot of Fame, the podcast where we break down the careers of former athletes and decide whether or not they should get a call to the Hall. On today's podcast, we're talking about former NBA swingman Lamar Odom and whether or not he should be in the Basketball Hall of Fame. And joining us in just a moment to discuss Odom's career and Hall of Fame candidacy is NBA writer Matt Issa. Before bringing Matt on, let's talk a little more about Lamar Odom. So Lamar Odom had a very long and productive NBA career. He played just under 1,000 games in the NBA. He came in that 1999 NBA draft. He was the fourth overall pick out of Rhode Island and immediately came to the league and made some noise. He was 6'10", 220 pounds, a lefty, and they put him at small forward, the Clippers did, because he could handle the rock, could rebound, he could shoot from the outside. He kind of did it all. His nicknames included the goods, the package, because at 6'10", he could kind of play point forward. He could bang down low. He averaged 16.7 points per game in his rookie season to go along with 7.8 boards and 4.2 assists. Quite the rookie season. And throughout his career, you know, he played for the Clippers, the Heat, ended up on the Lakers, which I think a lot of you probably remember him on, where he won two championships. He was on back-to-back championship teams in 2009 and 2010. He also won a Sixth Man of the Year award in 2011. And back in 2004, before all the, you know, the championships, the Sixth Man of the Year award, he was also part of the U.S. Olympic basketball team where he won a bronze medal in Athens in 2004. Kind of don't want to maybe remember that as much. But for his NBA career, he averaged 13 points per game, 8 boards, and 4 assists on 46% shooting from the field, 31% from three, and 69% from the free throw line. He had 12,781 career points and just over 9,000 career rebounds. Now, Lamar Odom never made an All-NBA team or an All-Star team. And Matt and I are going to discuss, you know, is his contributions to those Laker championship teams is kind of the third option. Are those contributions, are his versatility over his career, is it his, you know, playmaking at his size, especially early on that was not seen much in the NBA nowadays? Yes, we got Wembanyama shooting threes at 7'4", handling the rock. But when Lamar Odom came in 99, he was one of the first players we'd ever seen at that size play the way he did. So was the impact he made on the game, his role in those championship teams, enough to overcome his lack of additional accolades? Matt and I are going to discuss all that and more on today's pod. I also make Matt kind of determine, is Lamar Odom on zero-time All-Star Rushmore? Is Lamar Odom one of the best players ever not to make an All-Star game? And maybe why he didn't make All-Star teams? And maybe, you know, should he have been on a few All-Star teams over the years? Matt and I discuss all that and more. Great episode today. Always love having Matt on. So with the quick facts out of the way, let's bring on Matt. All right. So joining me today is a friend of the pod. He has been on here twice. This is his third time. It is NBA writer Matt Issa. Matt, welcome back to the podcast, buddy. How have you been?
Pretty good. Pretty good. We had some, take you guys a little bit behind the curtain, you know, a little bit of pre-show catch up. I'm doing well. It's always good to be on the pod. It's my third time. I don't know. Where am I in the leaderboards in terms of appearances? I
gotta be up there. You're not top five, but you're getting there. We got some five-timer club people now. But
Neil's in the top five, right?
Neil might be number one, I think. Okay. I think Neil's number one here. I think he's been on like 7 or 8 times. But you're trust me, three's good. Three's a good number. And, you know, Matt, we were talking before the pod, like, you know, we met a few years ago. You came on the pod a few years ago. We talked about Walter Davis, who just recently passed. So rest in peace, Walter Davis. But, you know, back when you came on the show for the first time, you were, I would say, a very, very early in your career NBA writer. And as we were just discussing now, you know, people can find your work all over the place. Basketball Insiders, Forbes, Opta Analyst. You got a new podcast that just dropped, the Media Pass. Go check that out and subscribe. But Matt, you're everywhere now, and this is now your full-time, it's your full-time job now, right?
Yes, it's sick. It's really sick. Now, like, I don't feel as bad about all the hours I spend with fantasy football. I'm like, well, because I already work today. I already work today watching basketball. So that means I can do more fantasy football stuff. So it's good.
Well, Matt, I'm glad you can take the time out of your busy schedule nowadays to still join this podcast every once in a while. We, of course, together are going to be talking basketball today. And I love the player we're talking about because as I was a fan coming up at an early age and I first started tuning to basketball, this was one of the players that really always caught my eye, that I was playing with in video games all the time, that I was randomly trying to catch Clipper games or Heat games or LA Laker games, and that is Lamar Odom. And as we always do on this show, we're going to talk about, you know, his career, his Hall of Fame candidacy, and whether or not we think he should be in the Hall of Fame. So, Matt, I'm going to ask you the question I ask you every time you come on about whoever we're talking about. You know, if this comes up, let's say on your pod in the future, Lamar Odom's name comes up for some reason as a comp, or you hear his name, you see his graphic, or you just start talking basketball and Lamar Odom comes up, I guess what's the first thing that's popping into your head when you think of Lamar Odom?
So this is, I'm going to deviate from the script a little bit and kill the vibe. But so the first thing that pops into my head, honestly, is he reminds me a lot of Tony Kukoc. This, first of all, the obvious parallel, he's the sixth man on a Phil Jackson dynasty, right? He's a lefty. He's very tall. He handles the ball very well. The differences, I would say, are he was stronger, more athletic, more physically athletic. I would say Kukoc was probably a little bit better of a passer than Lamar Odom. I think Lamar was a splendid passer for his size. I think Odom was a better defender, honestly. I was looking at his basketball reference a little bit earlier, and he was getting some all defensive team votes, and you could never really trust those, like, I would say before like 2010, but still, like, the fact that he was just getting the votes tells you he's not like an awful defender. So there's that. I guess it's just like he's basically the point. He was ahead of his time. He's a point forward kind of basketball player. He fits so well along like high end talent because he knew how to play the game. He knew how to cut. He knew how to move. He had an understanding of space. He's just like, I don't know. I feel like he's, and this is what this whole pod is about, he's just like a very underappreciated player because, you know, you look at that Lakers dynasty and you're thinking Kobe, you're thinking Powell. Some people just like to think about Derek Fisher. I don't know why, but they do. He was a very, very important part to one of, you know, the great modern dynasties.
Yeah. So Lamar Odom, and everyone needs to bear with us here. So he was drafted in 1999, fourth overall pick in that draft. And that was the first draft I remember watching from start to finish. And that was the draft where my Chicago Bulls picked Elton Brand first. And then there's names like Steve Francis, Baron Davis, Wally Szczerbiak, Sean Marion, like Ron Artest, you know, formerly Ron Artest. There's some names in that draft. And Lamar Odom comes out, and I'm like, who is this guy? He's 6'10", 220, and they're putting him at small forward. And he can handle the rock. Like, I agree with you, Kukoc. I think a better passer than Odom. But Odom had extremely good handles at his size at 6'10". And everyone listening needs to remember, like, nowadays, sure, we got Wemby dropping threes, handling the rock at 7'4". You know, even Ben Simmons, who, you know, everyone's kind of written off, he was 6'10 coming out, playing point guard, you know, rebounding, dishing, all of that. LeBron, you know, he comes in a few years after this draft, 2003, 6'8", he can play point guard. 6'10", 220 guys who can handle the rock really didn't exist yet. I mean, Magic Johnson being the only outlier, of course, in the 80s and 90s, but after Magic retired, there really wasn't anyone at this size doing the things Lamar Odom immediately came to the NBA and did. And Matt, like, his first year in the league, you talked about defense. He was averaging about a block and a half a game coming out. And his rookie season with the Clippers, he averages 17 points a game, 8 boards, and 4 assists. And I was like, that is a pretty stellar rookie season. So I went back, you know, through history, and I was like, who else put up a rookie season with at least those numbers, you know, 16 and a half points a game, just under 8 boards a game, and 4 assists. In the history of the NBA, Matt, how many other rookies do you think put together that kind of stat line where you're rebounding at a high rate, you're dishing, and you're scoring pretty well? In NBA history, outside of Lamar Odom, who else do you think has put up those kind of numbers?
See, I don't know if Doncic would have gotten to the 8 rebounds.
He did. He got exactly 7.8, actually. Lined up exactly with Odom.
Okay. So I think him, probably LeBron.
No LeBron.
Okay.
No rebounding LeBron. Numbers weren't high.
How many names are there?
So there it's Luka, Lamar, and then there's just 5 other names. There's players like Oscar Robertson and Larry Bird, who of course pop off the page, and those are the all-around guys you would think of. And then there's Maurice Stokes, who's in the Hall of Fame. He passed away, you know, soon after. I think he only played 2 or 3 years in the NBA, but he was like in the 50s, really the first all-around type guy. So he's a Hall of Famer. If you don't know who that is, look him up, ladies and gentlemen. And then Alvin Adams and Sidney Wicks. So those are kind of the wild cards
Alvin
in
Adams,
there.
Really?
Yes. Alvin Adams, first year in the league, 19 points a game, 9 boards, 5.5 assists.
He was Walter Davis's teammate, wasn't he?
He was. Yeah. That was it. Is it Adams and Davis, the callback? Yes. Those Suns teams were fun. Paul Westhall. And then Sidney Wicks. So 7 players in NBA history have had a rookie season with that amount of versatility. And if you really think through even, you know, the more modern game where more of these big men are able to rebound and pass, it is honestly shocking. Luka's kind of the only recent player other than Lamar to, you know, do it in the 21st century. All these other guys are 70s or earlier.
Yeah, especially with how much because I feel like nowadays, you know, rookies just have more, like, especially on a bad team, they just have more room to explore the studio space, you know? They just give them the keys immediately. Like, hey, do whatever the hell you want, man. Like, if we lose, good. If we win, good, I guess, you know? But, yeah, so it's interesting. Yeah, Lamar was able – I do remember that was like the youngest team in NBA history, right? His rookie year, that Clippers team.
I'm trying to think, like, when did Darius Miles get there? When was Quinn Richardson there? Like, those guys were all those Clippers teams. Yeah, Keon Dooling. Those Clippers teams were never very good, but they were so much fun to watch. If League Pass existed back then, they would have been an all League Pass team. Okay, I've now brought up the roster. Other names on his rookie year team. So his rookie year, none of those guys were there yet. I think they might have come a couple of years later, but like Michael Olakande was on that team. Maurice Taylor was on that team. His rookie year team was actually pretty awful. I think Miles might have came in the next draft as the 3rd pick overall. And then I think So the next year, Quinn Richardson. So Q came, Keon Dooling's there, Darius Miles is there, Corey Maggette's there. So that's the team we're thinking of. That was the next year. But those Clippers teams, super fun to watch, so young. I'm looking at this team right now. The following year, they had 3 30-year-olds, Matt. They weren't that young, but the guys we're thinking of are all 19, 20, 21 years old. It was a fun core that, of course, didn't last, but were at least fun to watch and at least fun in, you know, the video game department. But, Matt, I do want to move to our next segment here. We call this That Memorable Moment. And what we do is we try to pinpoint throughout a player's career, you know, what is his most quote-unquote memorable moment? And this could be a single play. It could be a game, a playoff series, a stretch of a season. It can really be an entire season if you want it to be. For Lamar Odom, what would you say his most memorable moment was?
Wait, really quickly. I know I'm deviating from the formula, but I just had a stat.
You can deviate as much as you want, Matt. You're a full-time writer now. You can do whatever you want on this show.
Thank you. Or was it? Okay, so I went on PvP stats, and so during that, like, that peak, that, you know, that 3-year run where they were, like, in the finals every year.
Sure.
When Odom, Gasol, Fisher, and Bryant were all on the floor together, they played over 3,400 minutes.
Okay.
They had a net rating of plus 11.7. If you had a net rating of plus 11.7 for an entire season, you would win 69 games. So that's very impressive. Odom fit in really well with high-level talent. I just wanted to say that. Now, to answer your question, most memorable moment. It's kind of funny. I feel like you have access to my notes, even though I didn't grant you access to my notes, because you kind of hinted at my memorable moment. And it was honestly the entirety of the 2008-2009 season. So I was reading a little bit earlier. I watched that season, but I was only maybe 10 years old, so I wasn't really paying too much attention to, like, the discussions around the starting lineup prior to the season. But I guess Phil Jackson came up with an idea that, it was time for Odom to come off of the bench so that when Bynum came back, he'd be in the starting lineup. And they also wanted Trevor Ariza to start. And at first, Greg Oden, sorry. But
We might
Lamar
do
Odom,
that. We might do that. I think I might
no,
have
you
done
don't
that
need to.
already. Did I
I
do that
hope
already?
not.
I don't know. Okay.
I hope
Odom.
not. Oh, yeah, Lamar Odom, the one whose career actually played out. He was kind of trepidatious about starting, moving to the bench, as most good players are. He'd started his whole career, but he did, and he was phenomenal. I have another statistic for you. When Lamar Odom was on the floor in the 2008-2009 season, according to Cleaning the Glass, the Lakers were +16.2. That was in the 99th percentile of net ratings for a player. So yeah, he was just amazing when he was on the court. He was able to buoy the team when Kobe was off the floor, and then when he was on the floor with Kobe and Gasol, he amplified them. So yeah, that whole season, and then just he also played a really nice role in the finals against the Magic, being able to match their length and their speed at the forward spot, but also being able to blitz past them on offense. Yeah, so 2008-2009 season. I hope I didn't take your answer.
No, you didn't at all. I mean, honestly, Matt, and I'm glad you brought that up because you're right on the money here. It's really just like with Odom's career in case, like he was a massive talent. And I want to talk about when we go to Twins, I want to talk about who I compare him to, because that when I think of Odom, I honestly think of this other player, and I think Odom could have maybe been that, but he found his role that he could play in the NBA and really, compete for championships with that Lakers team. And he fit in so perfectly alongside Kobe and Gasol, and those they made the finals 3 years in a row, and of course won 2009-10, as you were just saying. But he was the third best guy on those teams, and Kobe and Gasol are both Hall of Famers, as of course they should be. And Odom was kind of the third guy on those teams, and in the finals he put up good performances. But something that stood out to me actually when I was kind of watching some film on him, just to remember how he moved and how he played, I was watching the Suns series, the 2010 Western Conference Finals. So that was leading up to their second championship in that back-to-back. And, he didn't play that well in the finals in 2010. He was starting to get his minutes cut into a little bit. But in that Western Conference Finals against the Suns and Amar'e Stoudemire, he goes 14-12-3 for the series. He leads the four of the six games in rebounding for across both teams, including a 19-point-19 board game one performance in that series. And I almost watched that full game. And, he wasn't the biggest guy. I mean, he had the length, but his ability to go in there and get rebounds, I think it's almost underrated. And honestly, when I was going back and looking through his rebounding numbers for his career, they were better than I remember. For some reason, I thought of him more of like a, 6-7 rebound kind of guy, but many seasons he was flirting with double digits for almost half his career, especially with the Lakers when he was more focused down low. And his ability to rebound, bang down low, but also kind of straight to the outside. And, his three ball was nothing special, but he could, make a three or two in some games. He was just so versatile. And again, on those Lakers teams, Kobe needed the ball. We all know this. That's how those teams ran. And Lamar Odom was an ideal teammate to have. From everyone I've ever talked to about Lamar Odom, I've only heard he was the ideal teammate. Everyone loved to play with him. If you were playing pickup, that was the guy you would want on your team, because he's going to get you the ball. He's not going to complain if he doesn't get the ball. He's going to do the dirty work of getting boards. Just the ideal guy. And not just teammate, but I've only read that Lamar Odom, almost to a fault, is like one of the nicest guys to ever like come into the NBA. Like I have never really, and again, I'm not going to sugarcoat this, Lamar Odom has demons off the court. But in terms of his just his personality and who he is, I've only been told one of the most nice, genuine people, honest people out there. And I think, you know, which is why he could play with personalities like Kobe. I don't think everyone's meant to play with Kobe. Like Dwight Howard, not meant to play with Kobe. Gasol comes from Europe. You know, European players a little built differently. They're playing with like 35-year-olds when they're like 16. They don't care. Like they take shit from anyone. Lamar Odom could easily fit alongside Kobe and Gasol, play that third fiddle, and allow those Laker teams to win back-to-back championships. And I think if we're talking about Odom's like most memorable moment, you have to gravitate to those because that's what makes, you know, his resume stand out more than others. Because we're talking about this probably a little later. Doesn't have all NBA teams, doesn't have all defensive teams, doesn't have all-star teams, but he was kind of the third best player on two championship teams. He was a versatile option, you know, to fit perfectly alongside Kobe and Gasol, and he played that role perfectly.
Just one, that was well said. Just one thing I wanted to add about the rebounding. I feel like it speaks to his like instincts as a basketball player. He just like kind of knew where to be, like where the ball was going to bounce. He was good at positioning himself. And like he put up high rebounding numbers even when he was playing with two big men also on the court. Like,
yes.
And Gasol and Bynum were out there. Usually when that happens, even if you're a great rebounder, your numbers kind of diminish, but he was able to kind of keep those up. But yeah, well said. I was reading a little excerpt about his adolescence, and like when his mom died, I guess the last thing she said to him was like, be kind to everyone. And obviously he made good on that promise.
Yeah, he definitely took that to heart. And before we move on, Matt, one last thing I wanted to bring up, because this like third best player in a championship team. I get in these conversations all the time when we're talking about players and their resumes, because again, the people that don't have those additional accolades, you know, if they were in the playoffs a lot, if they were a part of big time teams and they had a big role, I think, of course, the best guy on a championship team, those guys are all in the Hall of Fame. Second best guy, a lot of times they're in the Hall of Fame. Third best guy on the team, a lot of those guys are in the Hall of Fame. The James Worthies of the world, the Chris Bosches of the world, the Robert Parrishes of the world, they're all in the Hall of Fame. And again, those guys did a lot more than just win the championship. So that's why they're easy ins. Lamar Odom, though, I was looking in. He's the third best guy on these teams, and he played in three finals with those Lakers teams. I was just thinking of someone else who, similar size, third guy in a championship team, a few of them in around the same era. And of course, Chris Bosh naturally comes up. And he was someone who came from Toronto, went to the Heat, and sacrificed his numbers for the good of the team. And he played a great role for those Heat teams. And he won two championships there. And I looked at what Bosh did in those finals, those four finals that he was on with the Heat, where they won two. And then I looked at Odom's three finals. And, you know, again, he won two of them. Their numbers, Matt, are not very different. I think their way they play is a little different, but I think their numbers are very similar. Bosh, across those four finals, averaged 15 points a game, 8 boards, 1 assist on 46% shooting from the field. And then Odom, he only averaged 11 points per game, so 4 points less, but also averaged 8 boards, averaged 2 assists, and shot 52% from the field for those Lakers teams. So again, Bosh, I think, was always the more talented offensive player from a scoring standpoint. When it comes to rebounding, distributing, even, you know, things like field goal percentage, defense, I think Odom and Bosh are a lot more similar. But then Bosh is a guy who, he was an 11-time All-Star. Like, he got the shine personally as well as a compliment to the team. Odom was more a compliment to the team, but outside of those maybe few years on the Clippers, really never shined individually. I mean, Matt, I don't think I'm going to ever argue with anyone. Chris Bosh is a better player than Lamar Odom. But how separate, I guess you tell me as the, you know, full-time NBA writer, should those guys be even included in the same sentence? Or is Chris Bosh just leaps and bounds ahead of a Lamar Odom?
Okay, so I haven't done it. Deep watch of Chris Bosh. I actually caught a couple of his old games this year when I was doing some scouting on some other projects, but wasn't like paying attention to him too much. But I mean, from what I just off the top of my mind, yeah, like Bosh was better scorer. He had, I think, a better post game. Probably trust his jumper a little bit more than I trust Odom's. I would say, especially in the second half of his career, he was a much better like rim protector. You know, he's better at using his size, and I think that's very valuable. I'd say Odom was a better ball handler, better passer. I think they're different players. Do I think that? So okay, so I'll get to this. How about I get to this? So when I did a really big project on Tony Kukoc this summer,
yeah.
And in it, I discovered that Kukoc probably should have made one or two All-Star teams, right? So Odom, I want to do the same thing with him, where I, you know, go really deep, look at all the players from those years, and kind of try to figure out. But my guess, my hunch is that he was performing at close to an All-Star level, if not at All-Star level, in a couple of those years, even though he didn't get an award. So I guess the reason I'm saying all this is because I would say Bosch is probably like in his best days, like a low end All-Star type player. So, you know, in the 20, 25 range type player. And if Odom was there during a couple seasons, then it really, yeah, I think you make a good point. Like these guys are not, it's not like night and day between them in terms of impact, obviously different play styles, but impact wise.
Yeah. And if you care about things like value over replacement player VORP or, you know, box plus minus, Lamar Odom, Chris Bosh for their careers, not just the finals, their NBA careers, same exact box plus minus value over replacement player. Odom actually beats Bosh in rebounding. They're identical. Assists, Odom has almost double defensively, and all of their, you know, slash line percentage wise, other than free throw percentage, they're almost equal. Bosh is a much more better free throw shooter, which I imagine, because I think of Bosh having a much better shot than Odom. Mm. The big difference, right, is the points per game. You know, Bosh, especially on Toronto, he was the main guy. He was averaging over 20 a game. So for Bosh's career, he's a 19 points per game guy. Odom's only at 13.5. But Matt, your earlier point about, I love that you go deep right into should someone have made an All-Star team, and you looked at Kukoc. I actually did this for Lamar Odom, and there was 2 years that stood out. And you can go do the homework later, but 2001, Odom had one of his better all-around years as a 21-year-old for the Clippers. He was going 17-8 with 5 assists, also 1.6 blocks per game. So he was very active on the defense front for a Clippers team that wasn't winning very much. And then 2004, when he just got to the Heat, he went 17-10-4 and was definitely one of the better players in the East that year. However, Matt, and this is what I want to get to a little later, so I'm going to table it after I say this. The death at power forward, at forward in general, in the 2000s, it was insane. Like on 2001, when he didn't make it with the Clippers, that 17-8-5 year, the forwards that made it that year were Chris Webber, who was an All-NBA first-teamer, I believe, that year, Tim Duncan, KG, Karl Malone, Antonio McDyess was putting up a 21-12 that year, and then Sheed was putting up a 19-8-3 that year. So I can't get mad that he didn't make it that year, especially because the Clippers weren't very good. And then in 2004, when he was on the Heat, he didn't make it. The other forwards making that year, Vince Carter, Jermaine O'Neal, I believe he finished third in MVP that year. He was out of his mind that year.
He had a great defensive year.
Paul Pierce, Ron Artest, and that was the year, his first year on the Pacers, he wins Defensive Player of the Year award that year. He's averaging 18 points a game that year. I can't argue with Artest. And then the only iffy one, and this is the one you could go back and forth, Kenyon Martin. Kenyon had, I didn't even know he had this good of a year. He was going 17-10 that year, along with 3 dishes, and the Nets were very good back then. I don't remember how good the Heat were in 2004. That's the only person maybe Lamar could replace. But again, the death at forward in those early 2000s years, I can't really complain he didn't make it. There was a glut of talent there, and you can only put so many people on the team.
Yeah, so I guess when I say, because I don't think we should penalize. Like, so when I'm saying All-Star, I'm talking about top 25 player in the league that year.
Sure.
I just don't think we should penalize, like because the way I think about it, not like about the actual All-Star teams, I'm like, were you performing at an All-Star level impact?
Got it.
Because for what we're trying to do here, honestly, I have a hard time believing that anyone has there, like, Have we had, we haven't had anyone make the, even with the cultural effect they've had, we haven't had anyone make the Hall of Fame without having a season where they were producing at an all-star level, regardless of whether they made an all-star team or not.
Not other than if you go into, like, you know, yeah, international committee maybe for their international exploits, but no other Hall of Famer. No one like that.
Yeah. So, like, right. That's why I was trying to answer that question. Like, was there ever a year when he was in the top 25 in the league, like regardless of conference or any of that? But I do definitely recognize that it was like, it's just a tough time to be a really good power forward. But yeah.
And Matt, to answer your question again, maybe this is not answering it perfectly, but hopefully this helps somewhat. In the 2003-2004 season, that year I was calling out, maybe you should make the all-star team. I'm a big guy, and I don't know how you feel. I don't know if we've ever had a full discussion on this, but I really, when I'm analyzing players from the past, and even when we're talking about players today, I really care about this stuff. I really care about how the voting works. All NBA votes, I care a lot about. And in 2003-2004 season, he got the 21st most votes. So there's 15 spots on those teams. He got 21st most. So in your top 25 in the league type discussion you're talking to me about, if you count all NBA votes as the end-all be-all, which is not fair, but I think it's a big chunk of it, hopefully, he was, at least that year, considered top 25 by all NBA votes he was receiving.
That's pretty interesting. No, I've heard of people use that method for player evaluation, like historical evaluation. So I do like that, and I feel like I should incorporate that more. But I did not notice that. Huh? Okay, so he's had some.
Yeah, he got 20 votes that year to make All NBA, and that was more than people like Vince Carter that year, Chauncey Billups, Carmelo Anthony, Pau Gasol, an older Iverson, Ray Allen, Elton Brand. Like, there's some pretty big names. You know, he was ahead of that year in terms of voting. So he was considered, you know, at minimum, I would say a top 25, top 30 player that year.
Cool. Very interesting.
All right, Matt, we got to go. We got to move ahead here. I knew we were going to get stuck on some of this stuff. We were talking about how quick we were going to do this one this time. Let's move to our next segment. We call this And Twins. And, you know, I was just talking about Bosch, so if I already, you know, jumped ahead here, feel free. We don't have to rehash the whole conversation, but for any new listeners or people not as familiar with this podcast, all we do at Ed Twins is I ask Matt to look at the Hall of Fame today, so who's in Springfield already, and say either by the style of their play or by their accolades, their stats, or the best case, I think, is a hybrid of both. But if I asked, you know, you to pick a twin out, or the closest to being the twin of Lamar Odom, who do you say it was, Matt?
So, I mean, I kind of, this is what I was talking about earlier when I said I jumped the gun. I think the most obvious one for me is Tony Kukoc.
Okay, that's.
But I also just want to say that I see a little bit of Manu Ginobili in him.
Ooh, I like that. There. Is it because he's left-handed? If he wasn't left-handed, yeah, would you say it?
No, but it's a left-hand sixth man, underappreciated. That's really what I was going for. Great ball handler.
No, yeah. Matt, I love that so much. This is why you're here. So I would have never thought about this, but Matt is on the money here. Manu Ginobili, to me, might be one of the more underrated talents to ever come through the NBA.
Oh, for sure.
And it's because of some of the stuff that maybe we're talking about with Lamar here. Like, Manu made two all-star teams, okay? He averaged 13 points. Honestly, his career averages, if you were someone that never watched basketball, right? And you just, all you care about is numbers and you don't look at anything about context or advanced metrics, and you were like, okay, Ginobili averaged 13 points per game for his career and 4 boards and 4 assists. Like, that's not a Hall of Famer. I mean, Lamar Odom and Ginobili averaged the exact amount of points per game, the same for their careers. And then Lamar Odom actually averaged the same amount of assists and way more rebounds than Ginobili. And Ginobili was part of 4 championship teams, and he did win a 6th man just like Lamar. So this is, from like their role and all of that, like, you are just on the freaking money here. So I love this. But we know Ginobili, you know, he's part of four championships. We know he sacrificed his numbers to fit the role that the Spurs needed him. And luckily, he was put in the Hall of Fame his first year, as he should have been. I was afraid he wasn't going to be. He was, as he rightfully should. I do not think Lamar Odom is as impactful as Ginobili was. I don't think he was as good as Ginobili. But Matt, his role, you are just so on the money. It's not even funny. So I'm so glad you brought him up. Real quickly, who I have down, and this is more from a standpoint of talent I saw. I have Chris Webber, who recently got in the Hall of Fame. And Chris Webber, to me, is one of the more talented players to ever come in the NBA. He still ended up in the Hall of Fame, but I almost felt like he should have reached higher levels. And part of Weber's stuff was injury. Part of it was situational. But Chris Webber, to me, coming out of Michigan, was one of the greatest talents to ever come in the NBA. And even though I don't think his career worked out as well as I maybe thought it should, he scored at an elite level. He led the league in rebounding 1 year. He was an excellent distributor for his size. Early on in his career, he was swatting shots in the stands. He stood 6'10", and he could honestly do it all. And I've always been awed by his talent, and I always thought his career could have even been even better. Lamar Odom's almost like a Chris Webber light to me. I feel like Lamar Odom came in the league at 6'10", and could honestly, talent-wise, should have been able to do whatever he wanted. He could score. He could rebound. He could pass. He was a good defender early on in his career. Even his first year in the league, he shot 36% from outside at 6'10". Again, that was something we were not seeing yet. And I just don't feel like Lamar Odom ever reached the heights these expectations maybe I unfairly set for him. But I feel like he had all the talent in the world to do it. So, you know, both of them being 6'10", guys that could rebound, pass, that is where the comparison kind of ends there. You know, I think Chris Webber, you know, his peak obviously way exceeds Odom's peak. You know, he was an All-NBA first team type guy. He was doing 2010 seasons, 5 assists, all those things. He never won a championship, and of course, Odom won 2. But in terms of the talent available at 6'10", Lamar Odom and Chris Webber do remind me of each other quite a bit.
I like that. No, I like that too. I saw an they actually had similarity scores on Basketball Reference.
Okay. I like that. All right, Matt. Let's move to final verdict. I'm sorry. Whoa. Let's move to court. Please. Gosh, I'm just jumping ahead. All right, Kelly. Let's move to our final segment here. We call this court. All right. So, Matt, we've touched on a few of these things, but there's some of these I want to dive a little deeper into now that we're at court here before we get to final verdict. First thing is we brought up earlier, and I'm going to stick to actual, I know you're talking about like all-star, was he a top 20, 25 player in the league at any point? We kind of covered that. But I want to talk about just all-star teams. I've already made the point, Lamar Odom never made an all-star team. And again, everyone looks at the Hall of Fame a little differently, who should be included, who shouldn't be. You know, there's some players that, you know, make a bunch of all-star teams and they're not in. And there's some people that don't, like, the Hall of Fame is not, you made this number of all-star teams, you're automatically in, because there's players like Sean Kemp that have 6 all-star appearances who aren't in. And then there's players like Dennis Rodman who have 2, or Kevin, or, oh God, who's the other one? Bill Bradley has 1. And that's a whole nother discussion. But there's guys like Larry Frost from the 50s. He has 8 all-star appearances, not in. So all-star appearances don't mean everything. But to me, it does still kind of mean something. It either means you were one of the best players in the league, or another way to look at it, you were one of the most popular players in the league. But either or, you are a name that continuously comes up in conversation for that given season if you make the all-star team. And Lamar Odom never made one. And again, I think a lot of it is that glut of talent at the forward position. I don't know if that's entirely his fault. And if we consider him a top 25 player, I don't know if it's the end of the world he make the all-star team. But Matt, where my head starts going, and I think you're familiar with some of my thinking here, I automatically go to stuff like Rushmore. And What's the Rushmore of people that never made one all-star team in the NBA? And I started to think, Matt, is Lamar Odom one of the top four players in NBA history never to make an all-star team? Now, I gave you no prep whatsoever for this. And I don't expect you to know everyone that made maybe one or zero or two. So I was nice enough and kind enough to list out 10 names I feel like should be in consideration. And I want you to build a Rushmore out of these names. And if there's another name like you want to pull out of your hat and throw in the ring, you most definitely can, because you brought up Tony Kukoc earlier, and I actually didn't put him on this list, and he never made an all-star team. So if you want to put him on here, you can. But here are the players you get to choose from. And then again, you can add Tony if you want. Cedric Cornbread Maxwell, a finals MVP, but never an all-star. So that's just odd. Richard Jefferson, Ron Harper, Jason Terry, Marcus Camby, Rod Strickland, Derek Harper, Sam Perkins, Robert Horry. And then, of course, Lamar Odom. And we're throwing Tony Kukoc in now because I already brought him up. So out of those players, Matt, again, Cedric Maxwell, Richard Jefferson, Ron Harper, Jason Terry, Marcus Camby, Rod Strickland, Derek Harper, Sam Perkins, Robert Horry, and of course, Lamar Odom and Tony Kukoc. If I asked you to make a Rushmore of the four best players to never make an all-star team, who are you putting on there?
Okay, well, can I add a... Oh, man, I kind of want to add two more names.
You can add who... Matt, you can add... Okay. I just wanted to give you a pool.
I think I have four.
To choose from. I wanted to give you a pool. So you go whoever you want.
It's going to be... I think Odom should be on there.
Okay.
I think Kukoc should be on there.
Okay.
I think that our guy, Shane Battier, should be on.
Oh, how'd I leave him off?
Here's another one you're going to kick yourself for.
Okay.
Because it's going to change, hopefully, this year. But Jamal Murray should also
No. It has to be retired because I think...
Okay.
But you are, Matt, you are right. If somehow Jamal Murray retired today and never made an all-star team, he would be number one on this list. It's a crime he's not in.
I would say Sam Perkins then.
Okay.
Okay. He was Al Horford before Al Horford.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. Okay. So, but Odom makes this list pretty, mm-hmm. You feel good about that. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. No, I wanted to get there because, again, some people will not even look at Odom because, you know, no All-NBAs, no All-Star teams. And I totally get that. You know, I usually, when I'm looking, I look at All-NBAs. And if you don't have All-NBAs, you better have a lot of All-Star teams. And Odom doesn't have either. But if you look at the Basketball Hall of Fame today and you just think about who gets in, like, there are several players with one all-star appearance or two all-star appearances, which are not international guys. They're just guys that, you know, played a big role in the game of basketball and were rewarded with getting in the Hall of Fame. And they've been in there for a number of years. And I think people today are like, oh, everyone gets in the Hall of Fame today. But some of the players I'm talking about, like Bill Bradley and Calvin Murphy, these are one-time all-stars who, you know, played in the 60s and 70s. Like, they've been in the Hall of Fame for a very long time, and they only had, you know, no All-NBA teams for either of those guys. They had great college careers, which I think separates them a bit from Lamar. Lamar only played 1 year at Rhode Island. But people that just disregard people because of all-star appearances, I sometimes say you got to hold the phone for just a second. Because there's a lot of players that do only have a few, but are in for other reasons. And a Hall of Fame candidate I'm going to have to talk about down the road is someone who just retired recently, Andre Iguodala, one-time All-Star. You know, some people feel very adamantly he should be in the Hall of Fame. Some people don't think he should have anything to do with the Hall of Fame. And that's another one-time All-Star. So that's kind of how I wanted to preface this. If you're looking at Lamar Odom's candidacy, you're like, there's no way this guy can be in. He's never made an All-Star team. That is fair to a point, but there are sometimes considerations like a conference is stacked or they're sacrificing, you know, their numbers for a role they play, et cetera, et cetera. That kind of prevents them from getting there, but it doesn't mean they weren't, as you were talking about earlier, Matt, maybe a top 20, 25 guy in the league at a given time.
Yeah, no, 1,000% agree with you. I think there's always, you got to look at it holistically, look at the context of everything. So do you want me to make my case for and against, or?
I do.
Okay, so four, I mean, I feel like it's pretty straightforward. Like, you know, it's the idea that we might have underrated him in history, not really understanding the skill set, how impactful it was to have that extra ball handler who could fit in next to other high-end players. So I think maybe if we were smarter, he would have a couple more All-Star awards. That would help it. And then you're also saying he was the third best player on a 3-year like kind of finals run. For you know, and the other two best players were Hall of Famers. So there's that. That's probably the argument for. The argument against is even if he was a top 25 player, it wasn't happening for like a 6-7 year stretch, and he wasn't like deep. Like Ginobili was like in his peak. He was a top 10 player. Like honestly, if you look at the
Oh,
impact and
oh yeah.
everything, yeah. So that's a little bit easier for me to swallow. So there's that. So the peak might not be high enough. The longevity might not be high enough. I mean, he only has like 11 productive seasons before it starts to fizzle out for him, right? 11, 12. So maybe that's it. And then also, yeah, lack of a college, like amazing college career. He did have one very good year at Rhode Island,
He
and
did.
then he did have an international career, but it wasn't very memorable.
I was gonna say, is the bronze medal in 2004 a
No,
case
I don't think it's
against or
good.
pro, or do we just not talk about that here?
I think it's against, honestly. So yeah, he doesn't have like this lore, I guess. He's not like
Yeah.
Luis Scola. He doesn't have like an
Yeah.
incredible international lore. So
Yeah.
that's kind of where I'm. That's the
No.
for and against.
I that is perfect. And before we go to final verdict now, so because I'm not jumping the gun, we're actually there. One last thing I wanted to drop before you and I both, you know, say our opinion on this matter. I talked about his versatility at the top of this podcast, and our good friends over at StatHead always provide me with great numbers here. And for Lamar Odom's career, he played 961 games, so just under 1,000 games for his career. His exact averages for his career, if we're just looking at kind of the three big categories here, 13.3 points per game, 8.4 rebounds, and 3.7 assists per game. So if I'm rounding, you know, 13, 8, 4 guy, for his career at 6'10. Very versatile kind of assortment of numbers here. Now, Matt, we're going to get very specific here, but if you were looking through NBA history, players that have at least played in 900 games and averaged at least 13.3 points per game, 8.4 boards, and 3.7 assists for their career. At least 900 games played. Just, you don't have to give me names, but how many other players do you think have done that for a career of over 900 games? 13.3, 8.4, 3.7. How many
Is there a
players
height?
total?
Did you filter
Nope,
out
no
height?
height.
No,
Any,
okay.
it could be anyone.
42.
Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
Four.
Wow.
Four others. Here's the names, Matt. Bill Russell. Have you ever heard of him?
Yeah, I might be familiar with him.
Wilt Chamberlain,
Okay.
Charles Barkley, and Kevin Garnett. That's it. So it's at least those totals for 900 games. It's Lamar Odom, Bill Russell, Wilt Chamberlain, Charles Barkley, and Kevin Garnett. If I drop the games played down to 800, right? I don't want to cherry pick Lamar Odom 900. If I drop it down to 800, you only add three more names to that list, Matt. That's it. Larry Bird, Elgin Baylor, and Chris Webber. So all I'm trying to get, again, everyone listening, hold your horses, relax. Lamar Odom is the outlier in that group. I totally understand that. We're not just talking about Hall of Famers here, because those guys are all Hall of Famers. We are talking about like Larry Bird, Elgin Baylor,
Murder's
Wilt
Row.
Chamberlain, Bill
Yeah,
Russell,
that's Murder's Row.
those are like top 12 guys of all time. And then, oh, Barkley and Garnett for an appetizer, along with Chris Webber, the lowly guy on this list. Like, these are all-time guys. And again, the versatility is what I'm trying to get across here. It's rare. I think people will join this list over time as NBA players get larger and they're able to do more. But right now, again, if you're at that 900 game threshold, it's Lamar Odom, Bill Russell, Wilt Chamberlain, Charles Barkley, Garnett. I just want everyone to understand, like, again, those guys are not like Odom is the outlier by far. And if you look at, you know, the line I'm drawing here, yeah, Lamar Odom's 13-8-4, but Wilt Chamberlain's 30-23-4, and Barkley's 22-12-4. So it's a little different, but still the versatility there. I just want everyone to understand Lamar Odom was a very special, versatile player, and one we hadn't really seen too much, you know, before he stepped in the NBA in 1999. But Matt, I do want to get the final verdict here. I'm going to ask you two questions and then I'm going to answer them as well. My two questions to you is, you know, if you had a vote, and I'm sure Matt, one day you will have a vote, but if you had a vote, would Lamar Odom, you know, would you vote Lamar Odom into the Hall of Fame? And then the second question is, do you think Lamar Odom will ever get into the Hall of Fame?
If I had a vote, unfortunately, I would not use it on Lamar Odom. As much as I love him, and I'm happy we did this, I don't think he's a Hall of Famer, not by the committee's criteria, not by my own arbitrary criteria. And I don't think he's going to get into the Hall of Fame. That's where I'm at with that. What about you?
Yeah, no, it's same exact. I do not think he should be in the Hall of Fame. I do not think he'll ever get in again. A key member on two championship teams, the third best player in championship teams. And as I was saying earlier, right, those third guys do get in the Hall of Fame, but you also have to have some other accolades. And if you look at some of those other guys I was mentioning, the Worthies, the Bosches, the Parrishes, like they have a lot more going on their resume, all-star appearances, all-NBA appearances, being a top 5-10 guy in the league. Odom just never reached those heights, and that's completely fine. He was a great player. He was someone that probably should have made an all-star team or two, but he was a talented guy who I just never think reached the heights his talent could have allowed him to if maybe he was in a different situation, or maybe just, you know, sometimes things just don't work out the way maybe everyone thinks they should sometimes. But a great player, a great teammate, a champion, and Matt, someone I'm glad you and I got to discuss today.
Yeah, this was awesome. It's always like whenever you do this, whether it be with me or the other people, when I listen to those pods, it's always like kind of depressing, pretty funny though. Like we spend the whole pod talking about a guy, and then at the end we're like, yeah, I actually wouldn't put him in the Hall of Fame. I know we spent the last hour convincing you that he should be there, but I wouldn't do it. So it's always funny to me.
It is. It's bittersweet at the end for sure, but you know, sometimes we do get to get these guys in, and then it's fun. And, you know, through the years, some of these guys we've talked about are in the Hall of Fame now, which is great. Cause then I can recirculate the pod and get more views. So that's all we're looking for here. But Matt, as always, a blast to have you on. I think we talked earlier, this is going to be a yearly thing, even with your busy schedule. Now we're going to find a way to get you on here every year, at least once, to talk hoops, talk basketball, especially when the season always starts up. I know I start going way more into basketball because it's on top of mind. Before I get you out of here, I know you got a lot going on your end. Plug away everywhere we can find you, everywhere we can listen to you. Floor is yours.
Yeah, so basically, I mean, I write for Basketball Insiders, The Analyst, and Forbes. Also a podcast now called The Media Pass with my friend Alex. But the best way to find me, most consolidated way to find me, is just on Twitter at MattIssa15. That's at MattIssa15. You can follow me there. I tweet out all my work, tweet some things that are on my mind sometimes. I tweet at you sometimes. Yeah.
Everyone, go check out Matt. He's one of the best young NBA writers out there. I follow the league through him and just several other people. He is one of my go-to guys. Matt, as always, buddy, appreciate you coming on. Good luck with this upcoming, I guess now, in swing NBA season. It should be a fun one.
Yeah, it should. Thank you so much for having me.
All right, I want to thank Matt again for coming on the podcast to talk about Lamar Odom. That is all we have for you today. So if you don't already, please follow us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow our Twitter account on Pod of Fame. If you've done all of that, you have done your homework. We will talk to you on Friday. Have a great week. And the world.